Toronto City Councillor Brad Bradford is described as the key to building more housing in Toronto, affordable housing. And he makes some great points about where this needs to happen and the expedited process by which we need it to happen in the city of Toronto. That, speed cameras, and a few other issues with the Toronto City Councillor Brad Bradford next on Toronto Today. Great to have you on the show. Thanks for coming back.
Always good to be here with you, Greg.
You got an interesting title. You're being described as the city's housing champion on Toronto City Council. No medals or trophies yet, but the task is pretty ambitious. Tell us why you're getting called that and what you have to do in the next 4 years.
Well, yeah, I think we're fresh out of hero medals, but it's the chair of the Planning and Housing Committee. And when you think about all of the big issues facing Torontonians and really folks across the entire GTA right now, housing and affordability is right at the top of the list. My background is in urban planning, so I used to do that type of work before I kind of entered the municipal political arena. And, you know, I'm a mid-30s guy, and I talk to lots of friends and young families, and they want to live in this city. They want to grow here. They want to work here. And yet the biggest impediment and challenge to being able to do that right now is the lack of affordable housing supply. So as a city, as a local government, we have to make some big moves over the next term to address housing supply, housing affordability head on. And the reality is it's going to look a lot different than how we've been doing it in the past, because what we've been doing to date just hasn't worked.
And some of that is obviously, you know, the short-term perspective, and we'll all weigh these accomplishments and maybe what didn't get accomplished in the next 4 years. We're hoping for more building than less building. And at the same time, this isn't just about the here and now. This is about, you're raising a young family, I'm raising kids, and I think most people across the GTA, and I'm sure where you live, say it's gutting right now to think that my kids can't live where I live. It's just going to be, or we'll have to sell our house to allow them to even buy any house in the GTA. These are things we got to reverse, and reverse quickly.
Well, and it's a generational issue, and you hit the nail on the head there. You know, I think about our daughter and, you know, where she would live if she wanted to live in Toronto and how she would be able to do that. And, you know, would we actually be in a position financially to help her help support her do that? And the answer is no. And I also talked to lots of seniors who have, you know, maybe lived in the Beaches or East York their entire lives. They want to downsize, and yet there's nowhere for them to go. So everybody's getting squeezed kind of across generations. We don't have enough of the right type of supply. We don't have enough options in all the different neighborhoods here in Toronto. And as local government, I can tell you, doing this job for the past 4 years and now embarking on the second term, we have to have some humility. We have to own some of that. Local governments and local councils have been part of the problem. But we need a whole of government solution. We have to work with the feds, the province, and the city in a really coordinated way to deliver the type of housing across the city so that people have options.
Toronto City Councillor Brad Bradford joins us on Toronto Today. What's your feel for the early chemistry of this new group? You look an obviously 7 or 8 very familiar faces, not just to you in your first term, but to all of us who follow the spectrum, the Kristen Wong Tams, the Joe Cressys. They're gone. You've got a lot of new faces. What's your early feel for how people can work through differences and get stuff done?
I think we're all motivated to get things done. And certainly when it comes to the housing agenda, that's top of mind for everyone. And again, I'm really grateful to be in a position to help lead on that. I'm impressed with the new crop of folks joining council. They're all very smart. They're all plugged in. We're going to find our cadence and rhythm at City Hall for sure. I used to work at City Hall, as I mentioned, and I used to say, I'm going to know how to get things done in there. And what I found was I really just knew where the washrooms were, because there's a big difference between being on the policy and civil service side from being on the political side. So I think that there's a tone for collaboration there, but it will take some time. Everybody's got to kind of feel it out. And, we've been having lunches and coffees and phone calls and text messages. I'm there to help them find their feet. But, you know, many of them don't need help. They're smart. They're competent. They're ambitious. And I think when we focused on our shared values, when we focus on the things that need to get done, there's always going to be a pathway forward for us to deliver for our communities and for Toronto.
People also describe you as a key ally of the mayor, John Tory. Does that come with its own set of struggles where you got to push back and say, I'm my own person and I have my own concepts and beliefs and they won't always align with the mayor's?
Yeah, they don't. Like everybody in everybody in the workplace or in society, we don't always agree on everything, but at the same time, we do agree on a lot. And I think you've seen leadership from the mayor over the past 8 years, the 4 years I've been there anyways, where it's been a very steady hand responding to some tremendous challenges. Obviously, housing is top of mind for both him and I and all of us. And, he's a consensus builder. So I'm happy to work with anyone and everyone, all of my city council colleagues. I think the mayor's shown tremendous leadership on a number of really tough files. He's going to need to continue to do that. I'm happy he's back. But when we have points of disagreement, it's not about standing up on the council floor and lighting somebody up. That's actually never been an effective way, in my view, to move the needle on these contentious conversations. It's about picking up the phone or having a meeting, talking about, where we may differ on viewpoints and finding a way to forge consensus. It's interesting because a lot of the work actually happens at the committee level. A lot of the work happens in those conversations. There's a few colleagues who like to stand up and beat their chest about things on the floor of council, and they get great headlines out of it. But you have to ask yourself, do they actually affect change? Do they actually deliver for their communities? And I've always found, again, the best way to get things done is by working together. So that's my approach to the job. And I would include that approach, whether I'm talking about my colleagues in the chamber or the provincial government or the federal government. You don't win arguments by telling people how stupid they are. We get more done when we work together. And that's been my approach.
Was there some hesitancy on the effectiveness and how it was going to be perceived by the public when you find out the mayor went to Doug Ford and said, I need these new powers to get things done. I need these new powers to build housing. And I know he said it only will be housing. But I also understand people saying this doesn't happen in too many other places. There's nothing I can compare this to in the federal or the provincial level, Brad, that is comparable. What did you think when you found out this happened?
Well, I was at first surprised, like a lot of folks. But we talked a lot about strong mayor powers during the election. Now, I recognize it was different and everybody was focused on the veto. I always thought the veto was less important because you try and imagine a scenario where there is 2/3 of council coming together to veto something. You don't see that very often. In fact, it never happened the last term. Mm-hmm. And so that always sort of raised the question, all right, here is the the cancellation or the vetoing of a policy or a bylaw. Where is the opportunity to deliver something in the positive or the affirmation? So yeah. I don't know what those conversations were like, of course, between, the mayor's team and Queen's Park. But I always think when the legislation actually came out, it was missing that proactive or affirmation piece. So let me give you an example. We always talk about it in the context of housing, and the mayor put some guardrails or boxes around where it would be used. There are colleagues out there that are not supportive of multi-tenant housing or rooming houses. Imagine somebody moved a motion to say no rooming houses in the city of Toronto. And there are people that have that view.
Yeah.
The mayor could veto that, but where would be the ability to proactively pass the opposite of that, which is, bring rooming houses across the city because we know that's going to be such a key piece of affordability in the city going forward. So I would imagine it was sort of looking at the bill as it was drafted, recognizing it was done in a vacuum and not with the consultation of City Hall, as is often the case.
Right.
And then going back and trying to fix it afterwards. And I don't think it's been a smooth process. And we can talk about Bill 23 as well and the challenges around that.
Yeah. Brad Bradford's kind enough to spend a little more time with us. I'm so glad you brought up Bill 23 because I would push to people who think, oh, the mayor and, he's in Doug Ford's pocket. The comments I read yesterday from John Tory, that's a ticked off mayor about the province potentially with Bill 23, reducing Toronto's ability to build, forcing a raise in property taxes, which was probably coming anyway, and kind of preventing the growth, as you note, that's necessary to put people in the proper homes that the bill was set up for in the first place, Brad.
Yeah, this bill is really problematic for Toronto. It's also problematic for municipalities across the province. And in fact, you are hearing a strong chorus of opposition from municipal leaders across political ideologies, mm-hmm. everybody's standing up and saying, this is a bad piece of legislation that will effectively kneecap municipalities on a go-forward basis. This is a downloading of additional services without a means to pay for it in municipalities in you know, a way that we saw in the 1990s. So in the Toronto context, we are dealing with a $200 million annual budget hit, you know, on at a time when it's been extremely financially challenging. This bill and legislation indicates that it's about building more housing. I'm trying to do that tough work, that tough sledding of making the case for intensification, making the case for growing up here in the city. And, you know, that proposition is really undermined when, you know, we're opening up the green belt and perpetuating the type of sprawl that's been so damaging for many decades here.
So, yeah, just the idea of you've got a budget shortfall anyway, but the idea that it becomes more massive just makes it impossible. And you can say, well, we can build, but then we can't put infrastructure around them, Brad. We can't put rec centers. We can't put transit. We can't pave roads. We can't come out and give you the proper services that your tax bill would in essence pay for and entitle you to if this bill goes through. So we can put the housing up, but we can't put much around it. It's not going to be as idyllic as it would seem.
Well, and I want to be clear. I think that there is a reasonable conversation to have around the development charge regime. And just for the listeners, the DCs are sort of the fees that are associated with new development, the idea that growth pays for growth. But inevitably, you know, there's a lot of folks that already live in the community that are going to benefit from those libraries or community centers or enhanced parks. So we do have to have a nuanced conversation about how we pay for those services. And I would suggest putting it on the backs of everybody who's buying a new home is not the way to do it. But at the same time, this is another example of legislation drafted up the street at Queen's Park, absent the sort of consultation with the municipalities who are actually going to have to deliver on it. And what we're left with is a massive funding gap for the services municipalities are required to provide and our ability to pay for it. So I think we can work with the province. We always try to, but we need to be at the table. You know, the mayor I know is going back and forth and pushing very forcefully on this. And that's because so much is at stake for our city. And so we need to make some progress on those conversations, whether it's, you know, putting some of the things back into the services back into the development charge regime, whether it's new funding tools, revenue opportunities. There's actually a lot of things that we could do to pay for these things. And in fact, I would point to the province's own task force on affordability that they published in February of this year, which had a lot of good ideas. Unfortunately, this legislation doesn't actually lead on the best and boldest ideas. It takes a much more timid approach. But one of the pieces in there was for them to move forward with a municipal housing delivery fund. So, you know, they are contemplating that, and there is a recognition that we do need to pay for the infrastructure to support the growth. But what we see in the legislation right now is just a kneecapping of municipalities and not the ability to do that. So there's work to do on this. And as it stands right now today, it's not something that any of us should be supporting.
Brad Bradford, Toronto City Council, our guest. Two more questions we want to get in, and we got about 4 minutes, but I want to ask you about the green belt. I do think there's some people criticizing moving into the green belt that are trying to have it both ways. They live in the city and they say, I don't want this in my neighborhood, not in my backyard. But they also say, you know, don't build out where it's further away from me. Can we find a balance? Can we find a give and take? Because anybody that's out in Ajax or anybody that's out in Milton knows at one point there was nothing out there 20 years ago. Like, progress is progress. We can't build more houses and preserve everything. But is there a balance?
Well, you know, I'm just very much in the intensification camp. And I think that, you know, again, the province's own task force was very clear that we need to have the intensification of our neighborhoods. We need to grow within the existing urban boundaries. And now we have this legislation coming forward that, you know, reduces municipal power to do that and makes it easier and more financially compelling to sprawl. And we all know the bad stuff that comes with that. You and I get very frustrated, and many of your listeners, with the congestion and the traffic that we see on our highways across the GTA. This ensures that, you know, we're going to continue to see that for decades to come. It's very expensive to build the new roads and the infrastructure to support sprawl. And again, there's not a financial pathway to do that. And obviously all of the environmental implications that come with this. So, you know, on the other hand, it's some of the loudest NIMBY voices, you know, that stand up and say, you know, we don't want to see urban sprawl. We don't want to see paving over a farmland. But then they show up in the bottom of the church basement to vehemently oppose a mid-rise development on top of a transit line. And the irony of that is not lost on me, but that's why I do acknowledge with humility that municipal council, you know, we need to stop bending the knee to every, you know, residents association that gets upset about the growth. Yes. We need to show leadership, and we need to make the case for growing within the city and making sure that we have more housing for more people. That is the way forward. It's not about sprawling over farmland. It's about building within our existing urban boundary.
Brad, it's Jason Chapman here. I'm in today with the show. Last question for you here, and we got to be quick. We got about a minute here. The CBC has a great story out this morning about all of these automated speed cameras around town, all right? So we know that they're working because the city's bringing in $34 million from these things. My question to you is a simple one, pal. Do we need to buy more than the 50 the city already has? Should these things be everywhere in the city as a way to actually slow traffic down? What do you think?
I think we want to expand the program. I know nobody likes getting a ticket in the mail, but at the same time, the data that comes back shows us they have a dramatic performance improvement on reducing speeding. Once one of those things goes up, you just see the speeds that are traveled absolutely plummet. And, you know, we are a growing city, 3 million people here, lots of kids, lots of seniors, and the speeding traffic, particularly through our school zones, particularly through our neighborhoods, that has to stop. We have far too many fatalities, and we know that speed kills. So again, I know nobody wants to get a ticket, but at the same time, we have to keep our streets safe for people, and automatic speed enforcement has proven to be a very effective tool at managing those speeds.
Five seconds too long, but that was great, Brad.
No, that was great. That was great. My previous question was 11 seconds too long. Brad, thanks for the visit today. We appreciate the time.
Hey, thank you very much, Greg. We'll see you soon.
Yeah, that was Brad Bradford, Toronto City Council, joining us on Toronto Today.
I'm not just a pawn in this game.
Three nights a week on Global.
They're putting targets on their back. Massive.
Drama.
I guess you could say I'm in a showman.
They're just so in love and so annoying. Enough.
Betrayal.
The guy just put up his best friend now.
And plot twists.
What is happening right now?
You'll never see coming.
If you're coming for me,
this is perfect.
I'm coming for you then.
It'll be a battle.
Like, it'll be war.
Big Brother Canada. All new Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Sundays on Global. Stream on Stack TV.